Thanks for joining me on the podcast. My guest today is Lexi Cooper. She's a writer and author, and I've known her for ages, and it was great to catch up again, and I really think you'll enjoy this conversation. Hope you enjoy it.
Thanks for joining us on the Brendan Osborne podcast.
From when?
Peanut finished high school.
Yeah.
So get her through to year 12, and then that might be something we would maybe think about.
Really?
Doing. Maybe.
The Sydney move.
So I hate Sydney though. So
have you lived in the city?
No. But I have the brother that lives down there, and yeah, there's a Northern Beaches, which I guess is a little bit different to Sydney. But
Sydney.
When we go to visit Sydney, if we go there for whatever reason, I am always very impatient to get out of the place.
Why would you move then?
For Erica, I guess. For Erica. For her opportunities. I mean, if it keeps going where she keeps getting shortlisted and then no, you can't because you live too far away, then that is something we'd have to take into consideration. She's been, getting really good feedback from directors and casting agents, so.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. That
I remember you saying to me once when she first started talking about acting, would we think about, up and moving to the States to give her a chance? And I remember that. And I was and it is the thing. It is what a lot of people do. In America particularly, they'll just up and move to LA to give it a try.
Well, you have to go to where the opportunity is.
Yeah, yeah. But see, here's the thing. In today's environment and situation with what's going on in the world, a lot of movies and TV shows are now being filmed in Australia. They're actually moving whole productions to Australia.
Yeah, so they're doing the new Thor?
They're doing Thor in Sydney. The Elvis Presley movie with Tom Hanks is in Queensland. One of the other Marvel films, can't for life me think of what that character is. It's being filmed in Sydney. The Matrix. So a lot, and now they're starting to talk about, because it's so hard to film in America at the moment, they're starting to talk about bringing in even TV shows to film here. And now that Disney owns Fox Studios in Sydney, because that was part of their purchase of the Fox Entertainment, a lot of the Disney stuff, hence Marvel and whatnot, are being filmed here now. Because I know Chris Hemsworth always wanted to make sure that any movie that he was in, if he could get it filmed in Australia, he would. That was always part of his contract. So, but because Disney/Marvel now own Fox Studios in Sydney, they're bringing a lot of their stuff here. So the opportunities are there for her, but we just live 2 hours away. Basically, we're an hour too far. So
yeah, I would be shifting the
address. But we'll let Peanut finish school because she's only got 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll go from there.
And that doesn't affect your work.
I can work anywhere. So give me a notebook and a pen and preferably a laptop from time to time and I'm okay. So no, it doesn't affect mine. And in all honesty, if you think about with what the husband does, most of his clients are Sydney, Darwin, Brisbane, Perth.
Mm.
I think he has one client here. So one small, large. Some he's got a few little ones, but so any kind of move to Sydney would probably work well for him.
Cheaper and more frequent flights too.
Yeah, true. But Sydney life for me, it's just too many people, cars, and it's just not enough trees, not enough, just stretches of green. I'm too much of a country girl, remember.
You can always go out to the Blue Mountains.
Yeah.
I think that's all. They go south, don't they, Sydney?
Yeah. And that's, I guess, if, I don't know, I mean, even Central Coast. I don't like the Central Coast. Well, sorry, Central Coast. I think a lot of people that work in Sydney live in the Central Coast, so maybe even, because that brings you into that hour or 60-minute radius for her. Mm-hmm. I think
just get a PO box. So what's going on in the writing world for you at the moment?
The writing world is surreal as always. I almost gave up, not gave up writing because I couldn't do that. I go mental, but I almost just decided I'm walking away from romance. That was, you know, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. Mainly because I completely stopped reading it. I was reading thrillers, I was reading horrors, sci-fi, comedy. I hadn't picked up a romance book to read for a very long time. And a romance writer should read romance as well, you know. But so I was just, I think, not disillusioned, just I couldn't connect. Don't know why, because it's not like my romance was in any, you know, dire straits. It was all good. So, and then I decided, you know what, well, I'm not going to do contemporary romance anymore. And I'm going to focus back on paranormal, which is how I started. I started paranormal romance, sci-fi romance. And I pulled out two really old manuscripts that used to be published with Samhain Publishing before they went belly up. And I pulled them out and I fooled around with them and just kind of brought them up to date and removed all the flip phones and put in smartphones and, you know, that type of stuff. And really quite enjoyed that whole process. And one of those is releasing in December. So that's quite exciting. Kind of rebranded it and changed a few things. And so I was like, okay, well, that was fun. I enjoyed that. And then I picked up a paranormal romance to read. Really enjoyed that. And then I got asked to be a part of a...
Just paranormal romance?
Yeah. So paranormal, you know, like werewolves, vampires.
Okay, gotcha.
Shapeshifters, yep. You know, fairies. The whole... Well, fairies tend to be a little bit more urban fantasy.
I don't know why I went straight to aliens.
That's sci-fi romance.
Paranormal. Okay. Got it.
Paranormal. So do you remember the TV show back in, early 2000s, True Blood? Do you remember True Blood? It was massive.
I was only introduced to True Blood... last year.
Oh, really?
I forget how far we got through it. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah.
I actually had lunch. Charlene Harris is the author that wrote the Sookie Stackhouse series. I had lunch with her. Not just me and her. There was a whole group of us. Other authors are all a bit fangirly. But, and that was what the series was based on. And at that time, the paranormal romance was huge. Around that time, and that's when I was publishing it as well, or writing it as well and publishing it. And and then I got caught up in the contemporary romance world, I think, with do you remember Love's Rhythm from back in our days? You know, the Nick Blackthorne, the rock star guy, you know. Yeah. And that was kind of like changed everything for me. But just touching, going back to my paranormal writing roots was really fun. And one of the things I like about paranormal romance... Well, one of the things I like about writing, but I really get into it when I write paranormal, is the world building. You know, you can really have fun. In contemporary romance, with your world building, it's more about family connections and relationships, you know, and who knows who and all the rest of it. But in paranormal, you bring in rules and laws and myths and, you know, like it's a wonderful experience to world build.
Yeah, and that goes along like with like your dystopian style things. There's just so much world building.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which I personally like. Like I'd prefer to spend more time on that deeper level of fiction, especially if you've been on your computer all day consuming content. I don't want to get home and or go out to the movies and watch something that's similar to the life you live.
Yeah.
Like it's boring.
Yeah. And you know what? That's quite possibly might have been why I started to become disconnected with contemporary romance as well. You know, it's kind of, even though the whole concept of romance is fantasy when it comes down to, you know, everything is wonderful. You have a dark moment, but it's, you know, like it's wonderful.
Is it appealing to just what people are feeling like they're lacking in their life? Is that where the connection is?
It's escapism.
Yep.
You know, so maybe not so much what they're lacking. I mean, I read romance. I have a fantastic relationship, you know, like romantic relationship, sexual relationship, whatever. Like it's great. So it's not so much you're wanting something, but I think romance readers like the escape and also the safety of romance, because you know that regardless of what happens along the way, they're going to end up together. Mm. It's, you know that there's a happy ever after. And if you don't get that happy ever after, it's not a romance. You've been, and there are a lot of authors out there that are trying to cash in on the romance reading readers, like the dollars, by writing books, but they're not romances, you know. But okay. They're like, oh, I'm writing an edgy romance. And but a romance should finish with them together, whether it be, you know, he and her or he and he or she and she. They need to finish together with a happy ever after, or at least a happy for now. You know that they're going to have a few years together. Mm-hmm. So you read romance for that escape, that happy warmth that you're going to get at the end. You know, we all know the destination, how it's going to end, but it's getting to that happy ever after. So not so much because contemporary readers or romance readers aren't reading it so much for what they want in their life, but the idea that this is exciting and wouldn't it be amazing, and there's that happy ever after. For whatever reason, I couldn't hook into that in myself for writing or reading, you know. So but then I got asked to be a part of a multi-author contemporary series at basically almost the day after I went, that's it, I'm done with romance, the contemporary romance. And then it was almost like the day after, and it was, let's do this, you know, these other authors, and let's do this. This is what we want to do. And it's kind of like connected little series. The characters all know each other. And because I am a shocker at saying no, I went, yeah, sure, why not?
Are they Australian authors?
No, one's American and one's lives in Israel.
Yeah, cool.
So, and it was, you know, and so I went, yeah, I like the idea. I like the concept of it. And so I started writing. And it just started pouring out, which is great. But I wrote it... not in a different way. It was, I decided to, I don't know how to explain this. I decided to write, like, not so much the fantasy. The hero has a dad's bod, you know, like, and that's almost a cardinal sin in romance.
It should be.
You know, like, it's they're all meant to have the chiseled abs and the pecs and, you know, like that. But yeah, I just thought, you know, this is a guy he's just a maths teacher. He's a maths teacher, you know, like he's not the CEO. He's not a rock star. He's a maths teacher who finds himself in America at a Halloween party. He goes as a dead Steve Irwin.
Oh, I don't know why I reacted that way.
Stingray. He goes and buys a stingray, soft toy stingray, and it's and no one gets the joke. I mean, everyone's horrified except for this one American who, you know, comes up to him. But I wrote what I kind of, if I was in a situation where I was at a party, I'm not the, you know, 5'9" size 6 girl, and I would like to think that I'd still have a good time and connect with someone, you know, like in that, does that make sense, you know?
Totally.
So I wrote a dad bod hero, and the first sex scene goes completely wrong, you know, it's but they just laugh all the way through it. So I wrote it just wanting to have fun, and I completely went, there's certain, not rules, but there's certain ways, certain expectations. I just kind of wrote, you know, he says I'm going to throw you on the bed, and then he tries and he fails and he ends up falling on her and she's laughing when they reach a point where they, you know, like the deed has been done and they want to do it again, but crap, we don't have another condom, and, you know, like it's that. It was just, I wanted it to be more, not realistic, but fun realistic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I had fun. I really had fun. And then, interestingly enough, then the author anthology didn't fall through, but deadlines became impossible for some of the other authors involved, the ones that we were planning to hit. But I had this story. It's only a novella, so it's like 25,000 words. I loved it. I had so much fun connecting with my writing self again that I didn't want to lose. I didn't want to put it aside, because then I was worried that, okay, I've written it, but now it doesn't exist anywhere. And what would that do to my writing, me? I sound so strange. So I then, with, you know, I spoke to the other group of authors, and I said, well, look, I'm going to pivot this to be a completely new series for me. So I kind of took it from the setting that it was in. I put it into a different setting. I just changed characters' names and reworked it until it was my story. And it's now become the beginning of a trilogy of three sisters, triplets, that, you know, and they're happy ever afters. So they all find... And I had, again, I had so much fun. And I've now started working on the second one. So where I went from I'm never going to write contemporary romance again to, hey, look, I've got three planned and all three will be out by, you know, this one comes out, the first one called Along Come an Aussie. Along Comes an Aussie, because, you know, why not? It comes out in October. The next one that I've just started writing, in theory, will come out for Christmas. And then the third one for Valentine's Day. So
yeah, well, I guess it's good because you potentially are quite rebellious.
Yeah.
Like, so so it's that you're not doing something because you don't want to. Even though if it's the same thing you're doing, it's you've come back to it, but it's on your terms.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And you put your spin on it. Like, whereas it's so easy to, and that doesn't, that's writing, that's if it's creating content, that's if it's you're trying to like create a business, it's so easy just to get sucked in with what everyone else is doing. And that's one of the issues with, I guess, the internet is that you're constantly aware of what everyone else is doing at all times.
Yeah.
Like the thing is, like if you're an author pre-internet, you would have only got a hold of someone's book once they released it.
Yep.
And you would have probably been so far into your own project by then that it wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
And you might make some tweaks and adjustments, but at the same, like you might be starting to do something and then you get an idea of what someone else is doing or what they've done and not even... and. All over the world, so it's times so many multiples, and then it's like, oh, now I have to change this way, and you pull it all over the place. So by the time you have done it, you're not back to that, like you said, like that true, yeah, that essence of what you want to do with it.
Yeah.
So have you published that collated one yet?
No, and yeah. It's now the one with the multiple authors. It's now going to be 2021, mm-hmm. And it's I think it's going to be shifting again in its theme and concept, bringing in more authors.
Yep.
But I've really planned that far in advance, as you know. Yep. So then in itself is quite interesting that I'm thinking about. And it's one of the things that I do very badly. I know there are authors out there that they know what they're releasing for 2 years, mm-hmm. in advance. I don't. And the other thing... with the, you know, planning 2021, 2022 and all the rest of it, which a lot of authors do, they then set up books for pre-authors. At the beginning of this year when my dad died, so I missed uploading a book onto Amazon and I realised an hour after the deadline that this was just after my dad had died. And I sent Amazon an email saying, look, this is what's happened. My dad has died. I've missed it by an hour. But because I missed it, because I had the book up for pre-order, right? So and I had a lot of pre-orders for this book.
Yep.
This was unconditional. So the first book, you know, mm-hmm. in the Always series. Because I missed uploading the book, I lost all my rights to pre-order for 12 months with Amazon.
Oh, wow.
So just, and they I got a nice email back. Look, we're really sorry, you know, for your loss, but, yeah. You know.
Yep.
So I was like, ah. So, but... So there was a part of me that was thinking, right, I've lost any ability to do pre-orders. Oh, there goes my whole career. You know, like, yeah.
Can you do, like, is it only, the only way to do it is through Amazon? Or could you do pre-orders?
I could do pre-orders elsewhere. I can do pre-orders on Apple Books, on Kobo, on Nook, which is the Barnes & Noble.
On your own website?
I haven't reached that stage yet. Okay. I've got a few authors that keep telling me now, you know, need to just do it yourself. But yeah, that requires far more logic and organisational skills than I have, as you know.
We can talk after. I'll help you out with that part.
Yeah, that one's – but I should. Like, it's honestly – I have a really good friend. She writes historical romance and she's now selling through her own website. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she's – you need to – and how do you then plan? How do you, you know, put up for pre-order something in 12 months if I don't have the rights anymore? But in all honesty, I have actually found out I don't really know if it's made that much of an impact,
yep,
for me for release numbers and for release marketing. And I mean, I've had a, it's been a 2020, strange year, you know, like.
Can you edit things once you've added them to Amazon, like in terms of like previous books and stuff?
Or yeah. So once they're up there, I mean, Amazon's a little bit funny with how you do it. I mean, they have to approve any changes that you make. So let's say I release a book and I decide, the blurb, I want to change the blurb or I want to give it a new cover or
an image of your new book on the inside of a cover of your old book, like as a pre thing?
Like so if I have, say, like book one and I've already got the cover for book two, yeah, you can do that.
Just rather than a pre-release, if you've got a new book, add it to the inside cover of all your other books.
Yes, yeah. So you can do that. But so then when your original version's out there, then Amazon has to pre-approve the new ones. But most of the time it's okay. Amazon's an interesting company to deal with.
Is that where it's at right now? Is it mainly Amazon?
Because I'm multi-platform, what I found really interesting, different books do better at different platforms. So Apple will do really well with this particular book, but I don't know why. But for whatever reason, Apple readers, they're all buying that one. Amazon readers like this one. I got royalty reports the other day, and for some strange reason, one book had just exploded in Nook. I don't know why. I didn't have any kind of marketing thing. I didn't put it on sale. Just suddenly it did really well. So for some authors, Amazon is the end all and be all, but I would not say that's the case for me. But a lot of people know how to do the advertising, Amazon advertising, marketing. And as we know, that's not really something that I'm good at.
So what have you noticed? Have you fully moved to self-publish now?
I haven't yet. I've still got books that are with publishers, but anything that I'm doing right now as Lexi, I'm self-publishing.
Yeah, and so is that the trend for most authors, going self-published? Or
I think so, yes. Mainly because of the control that you have.
Yep.
There's still something to be said. You know, like, it's really nice just to send a book to a publisher and they go, right, excellent, here's the cover, we're going to do the marketing. But even now, publishers expect their authors to do a lot of the marketing. So if the publisher's expecting you to do the marketing, then I should be doing the marketing and getting most of the money.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do think it's still nice to be able to say, hey, look, I'm published with Simon & Schuster, or I've just signed a contract with Macmillan. That's,
there's something nice about signing a contract.
Yeah, there's something nice about signing a contract. But it's got to be the right contract as well.
Totally.
I took a book back and because we'd signed the contract and then I went, you know what, I actually just don't think you're going to give me what I want with this book. So I took the contract back and I have no regrets. So, and I did what I wanted to do with it. But that was a hard decision. Holy, because who in their right mind asks a publisher to give you the book back? But I did, and I actually have no regrets. It was probably one of the best things I did.
And how was COVID affect authors and writing? I know you can write from anywhere and it doesn't really affect you on the day-to-day, but what about the industry?
Do you know, I actually read an article the other day and it was saying everyone expected the book industry to explode because we're all in lockdown, and it didn't. The streaming industry is what really exploded, and home gym equipment, home renovations, gardening. You know, that really.
Yep.
But the book industry, no, the which was a little bit disappointing as an author, as a reader, and as an ex-English teacher, it kind of hurt my heart that people aren't turning to words as much as I think they should.
Yeah.
But there was some really, authors were doing some really clever things. Okay, you're in lockdown now. Here's the whole six books in this series for 99 cents. Or here's, I've making the first book in every series free, to get people in. There was quite a bit of that happening. I did some of that. But I think from just talking to other authors and looking at my own numbers, there were particularly like March and April, people were, I think, worried, so they just didn't spend anything.
Yeah, early on, definitely. Yeah, and the spending came back pretty quick, I feel.
Yeah. And then you've also, I mean, there's so many free books out there. So if you're in a situation as a reader where you're worried about your income may have been temporarily suspended or you've lost your job, you're not going to go out and buy books, but you will look for the ones that are free. So
yeah. And that's why I think like even things like doing this podcast or even social media and for authors especially, because the more that you can have people just connecting with you, especially if you're not like a big crazy name that just automatically is the front of every store, then I think like these types of small engagements, they go, oh, cool, that's interesting. I'm interested in her book.
Yeah.
Versus the story or the characters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's definitely a direction that most things will have.
I think being able to, particularly at the moment where we're all, the majority of my readership are in America, and so many of them are still in lockdown or existing in some kind of quarantine type existence, being able to interact with people via social media and then getting to know that author, you know, so my gosh, that's that loopy crazy Australian. I will read her book because I wonder if her books are as loopy and as crazy as she is.
Yeah,
you know, so social media is really good to connect with your readers and for the readers to connect with authors and to establish that kind of relationship. And I, it's one of those things that I have to, because I'm a bit old, and the whole idea of social media is still not something that I'm overly good at doing. But you know, when I get on there, I'm just crazy loopy Lexi. Yeah. But I have to remind myself, oh, I really probably should go on there. They want to hear about that, or they want to see a picture of my dog, or you know, that's
something. It's definitely that disconnect between the marketing side of things and the social, the personal level of social.
Yeah.
So that's where I think the disconnect is. It's because, well, you can put, just one sec. You can.
Someone's got a chainsaw somewhere, is it?
Yeah, exactly. yeah, so where I was going with that is that you can put like a post up personally, and then you also have to do something business wise.
Yeah.
And now there's a blend between, no, you sort of, you're not about being the business and the person, you need to be the one thing.
Yeah.
So, but it's like, well, as an individual and as a person, I don't really want to share stuff, but I'm not willing to also put out stuff on social that is totally not myself.
Yeah.
Because especially in Australian culture, it's showy.
Yeah.
Which is a big downfall to try to not overcome that.
Yeah.
If you want to do it, that is. And then that's, I guess, the other layer to it is that you don't feel like sharing things sometimes. Yeah. But if you were to do like a business advertising thing, it's not about how you feel, it's what you need to do.
Yeah.
So trying to, I guess, bring that energy where you are doing things potentially even when you don't feel like them. And then again, you go deeper again, and then it's like, oh, well, if I'm doing that, then it's fake.
Yeah.
So I can't do that. I can't hop online and do a happy post or do something exciting with an author when I'm feeling down.
Yeah.
Because it's not true. Like,
I found that even now, I mean, you know me, I tend to be a little bit political and I get very angry about political situations, and I have to stop myself sometimes from, particularly on Twitter, just ranting about politics, because that's not what the people that are following me on Twitter, I'm the author. So why is this author, you know, ranting about some leader of some country, usually ours, you know. So so there's times where I think, okay, you know, I probably should put something about my writing on there, you know. But because I'm an Australian from a certain generation, that was raised not to boast, not to show off, you know, not to brag. It's something that I have to fight against in myself. I've got an awesome review, but if I put it on there, people are just going to think I'm, you know, going on about how great I am.
Yep.
Well, I have to do that because how else do they, you know. It's a really strange balance for me to try and work out. How do I talk about myself and be okay with that in myself, but I'm always worried that people are just thinking, oh, God, really? She's just going on about herself again? Mm-hmm. Which is why I think the majority of my social media tends to be about my dog, about me being stupid, the girls doing something awesome. But then again, even then, I don't tend to talk about them too much because they need I don't have the right to thrust them into my world on social media, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But if they were posting everything about their life but themselves, you'd probably be concerned. You're like,
oh, absolutely.
You'd be like, you only post pictures of your dog, dog, or you only post pictures of your friend. Are you okay? With your self-esteem, because you're not sharing yourself. As a parent, like, we do that quite a bit. Like, we put patterns onto them that we don't do ourselves.
Yeah, I've never really thought about it like that. But I think, again, maybe that's a generational thing, because I'm not really sure, although you did mention it. I mean, I don't know if in Australia, is that concept of the tall poppy still as strong as it used to be back in, like, when I was growing up? Like, the Generation X, you did not talk about how good you were. You know, like, that was...
I think if you're talking about, like, going online with things...
Yeah.
It's a different world. Like, they're two different things. Like,
you don't walk into a pub and brag for 5 hours, but online you can post, like, look what I've done.
Post yourself in near no clothes constantly, and it's totally accepted. So, like, the thing is, like, you got to just think about on the spectrum where you sit in terms of that showboatness or putting yourself out there. It's even if you were to talk about your writing, it would be on level two of like where it's at. Like, and people that aren't interested would be so bored by it, they wouldn't even see it.
Yeah.
Like, they would just skim over the top of it.
Yeah.
Like, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But then it comes back to whether you want to.
Yeah.
But if you put it into your plan, like, and you're sharing as a part of for your business and you know the benefit in it, and that's like the direction that I want to go with this, like, and that's something that would definitely work with you. And I think I've mentioned that ages ago where, like, if you were sharing conversations you were having with other authors, that's like the perfect way to.
Yeah. And I know some awesome authors.
Yeah, like.
They're really characters.
Yeah,
so,
like a picture, like, of you with them or and tagging them, those sorts of things, like, or just a conversation with them.
Do you know, every time I tag an author or a reader, I always think about you telling me, make sure you always tag the people that you know, and because that makes them feel good. I listen to you once upon a time.
We're good. 100%. You've got those connections. Well, you're doing it a little bit already, not in the social sense, but in the actual working together sense. But do you have the relationship with people to, like, promote each other's books and stuff?
And that's one thing I actually really enjoy doing is telling people about other books. Other authors, you know, this book is amazing and this author is awesome. Please buy that book and you know, support that author. I really like doing that. And I do it, I don't expect it back too. But I just like, because if I've read a really good book, wow, this book is amazing. I want everyone in the world to read this book. You know, I will give you a list of all the books that I want you to read when we have a conversation next, so we can talk about how good that book is and how amazing that author is. And, you know, she's done this or he's done that. Although most of the authors I know are women, I must admit.
Yep.
There's not many. I think I know two male romance authors. I know some authors that are men but not romance, but I think two male romance authors.
How come it's not a thing?
I mean, there could be some male writers out there writing under female pen names or, you know, ambiguous pen names. Yeah, right. But I don't want to say anything controversial, but I think the the standard belief is men don't know how to write. Oh, I'm being very, very dangerous with my wording here. It's not the norm for men to be able to write that emotional depth that romance readers want. Did I say that without
as a man, I take zero offense.
Okay, rightio, there you go.
But I can't speak for the whole group.
Okay, so I think that's why. I actually don't know. The two that I know write amazing romance. And as I said, there's probably a lot more out there that are behind a female pen name or a non-specific pen name. I don't know.
Yeah.
So,
have you looked at, or is it a thing to go to audio on your books?
Yeah, I did. I looked at turning the Always series, yep. So the Unconditional, Unforgettable, Undeniable, into audiobooks. And it's a rather expensive upfront to employ the actor or the actress. You know,
you wouldn't do it yourself.
Just no one wants to hear me talk for like 10 hours or however long a book goes for. Yeah. I looked at an Unconditional, which is 82,000 words. I don't know what that lines up to in pages. 82,000 words. It was going to cost me, I think it was $1,700, mm-hmm. for the narrator. And that was just a base price. And then you've got to go through the actually auditioning process, finding the voice actor that you like. And the production of it, so I did start to look at it, and it is something that I want to go into a little bit more. But again, interestingly enough, the audio book, so the whole book industry hasn't done as well as they thought I was going to in COVID times. And the audio book industry has suffered. Well, that was clumsily.
Really, audiobooks are down too.
Yeah, the reason being is most people listen to this is the theory. Most people listen to their audiobooks on their commute.
Yep.
And a large chunk of people aren't commuting anymore.
That makes sense.
So, so they're just not listening, it's very hard to listen to an audiobook when you're at home trying to homeschool your kids and, do your own work at home and so
that makes sense.
When life returns to as close to normal as we'll ever get again, then I will probably – because I would like to put – particularly that series. That's the one that when I do it, that will be the series that I start with. Mm-hmm. But, it's – and a lot of authors release everything now in audio as well as print and digital. So I'm print and digital – but, that audio, I haven't taken that step yet.
Yep.
So I don't know. The one of the things that worries me more than anything else is because I don't like upsetting people or saying no, is, someone does the audition and I don't really like them, but I would be very nervous about going, I don't like the way you sound. So I would then employ someone to narrate the book and hate the way they sound. That's a problem for me. I need. That's when I would need like a manager to step in and go, no, Lexi doesn't like that.
Don't they just audition? Is that right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So they audition and then I don't know. If I had to interact with them during the auditioning process, then I'd be in trouble.
Well, just hire or not hire. Just get five people at the same time.
Yeah.
To all apply for it at the same time. So then you have to say to no people regardless. Because also don't want to leave them hanging because that'll make you feel bad too.
Well, I know what it's like and, for the, the whole auditioning thing and waiting for that that answer, So, I'll do it one day.
Because a lot of your books have the Australian characters.
Yeah, and so that's the other problem because audio book listeners, they need to connect with the narrator, the voice. And it's hard, particularly if it's Unforgettable, written entirely from the Australian guy's point of view. So first person, the whole book, and it's hard to find an Australian actor, voice actor, for to do that whole book. So then you've got to employ an American who's trying to do an Australian accent. And I've got a few audiobooks out there that have been done by publishers that, again, have, you know, they've got their American voiceover actors and the Australian characters are in there. And, you know, the Australian accent's not easy to do, apparently.
It doesn't work.
Yeah. So there's that problem as well, finding that right, because Australian characters sound a very specific way,
yep.
You know, finding that voice actor is not. And most of the audio book companies that make them for you are in America. So they're, you know, the voice actors are American. So that's a bit tricky.
Yeah.
So maybe I should just get you to narrate the whole book.
Oh, you think?
Yeah. Well, the main character's name is Brendan.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's quite convenient. So 1700 is the going rate. Or is it?
Yeah, I shouldn't have said that, should I? $5, I think it is.
Yeah, okay, all right. We can talk
about
that.
And a cup of coffee.
That wouldn't be too bad. So what's happening else outside of being an author? Authors, like, before you answer that question, it's interesting because it seems like the world of writing and authors is just so far away from reality because you don't actually know many authors. Like, you know people who are, like, write a book because they need to do it to promote it for their business.
Yeah.
And it's sort of they're an author, but...
slightly different. You're a writer and an author are two very different things.
Yeah, they're writing it not because it's their thing, it's because they just need to do it as part of the process, especially, like, with your, like, just entrepreneurship. It's a step.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I'll write a book.
Yeah. Like, and release a book. And, with his German Shepherd, and I'm throwing the ball for Ebony, you know, and right, she's mental. And this guy, every time, just glares at me because I think maybe I'm throwing the ball and Ebony's off running around having a good time. I don't throw the ball anywhere near him, but he walks past with his German Shepherd and he glares, and the German Shepherd's trying to get off the lead. And that's a really big dog out there.
That's only a puppy.
So, but I like German Shepherds, but. I don't like German Shepherd owners that glare at me.
Yeah. Is it like, yeah, are you playing, are you thinking you're going to distract his dog?
I don't know. I actually don't know. Every morning, it's every morning and it has been for months now. Mm-hmm. You'd think at some point in time he'd work out, A, I'm going to be in the middle. And it's like a cricket oval that I go to and I'm in the middle, right? So I'm not even close to the fence and Ebony doesn't care about anything. When the ball's there, that's the only thing that exists. You know, it doesn't matter that there's other dogs, other people. She's just chasing the ball. That's the Kelpie coming out in her.
Yep.
Every morning I'm there and he walks past and glares every day. I don't know. One day I'm going to go up and go, hi, you know, like, this is my dog.
One day.
One day.
It's not happening.
Nah, I'll have to have a particularly bad day.
Yeah.
And then I'll get my cranky pants on. That's probably a good idea if I don't go anywhere near him then. So.
Yeah, we'll see how you go. Is it, what are you doing, karate?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Why did I start karate? Okay. So you know, I got my black belt when I was 16 in taekwondo, re-taekwondo, right? And I'm almost 50 and I'm a little bit heavier than I used to be and not as fit as I used to be. And, my youngest daughter's doing karate. She's getting very close to getting her black belt.
Cool.
And every time we'd go to a grading, I'd sit there and I'd just like, oh, you know, I loved doing taekwondo. Like, I absolutely loved it. It was taekwondo and hockey were my two things. I loved it and I miss it. And I'd sit in the grading and like, oh, I just had that feeling here, you know, I'd love to do it. And I remember when she was only getting her green belt, so really quite early, and I said, I might come and do karate with you. And she was like, no way, you know, like, no. And because if I had started then, we still would have been in the same, like, it's beginners and then advanced, you know. And but because she's so close to getting her own black belt, if I start now, I'm nowhere near her. So we're not in the same classes. So last Saturday I started and I walked off to karate and I did my thing and that was interesting. I kept my watch on just to see what my heart would do. It was really insane. It was, it had some really good spikes, but I had so much fun. It's different. It's very different to taekwondo, this karate. So there's a lot of same techniques, but a lot of different. The stances are different. But I decided to do it. I think maybe a nostalgia thing as well. As I said, I really loved Taekwondo. It was a part of who I was when I was doing it, and still is, I guess. And I enjoyed just putting the gi on and putting my belt on, even though it was a white belt. It was really weird, you know, because I'm black belt, you know. But because putting the belt on, I don't know how to explain it. It wasn't a feeling of completion or a sense of satisfaction, but it was like a piece of me that hasn't been there for a long time is maybe coming back. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. I went and I had a great time, and so that was my first round, 40 minutes. There was a lot of sweat, and on Sunday there was a lot of sore muscles, but you know, start a beginner, so you know, just doing beginner techniques. And then I had my second class yesterday, and that was with a different sensei, and we were doing kicks, and I don't know if you remember, but I love kicks, you know.
I do, like, yes.
Remember kicks? And we were doing what I call a front kick in Taekwondo. They call it something different. It's all Japanese, the techniques and names that they're using in karate. But so it was that kick into the bag, and the sensei asked me, she's like, you know, you've done something before, haven't you? And so I was like, yeah. She was like, so I'm having fun. And I think I've grappled not with getting old. I don't care about getting old, but it's like I'm going to be 50 soon. There's things that I would have liked when I was 50 that maybe I haven't achieved, or I feel like I should be doing, or I should have done. I don't know. But I thought,
for health, you mean?
Oh, for everything, not just for health. Definitely for health. I mean, mm-hmm. Again, a little bit rounder than I used to be, and I'd like to not be quite so round. And it's very good for health. Like, you know, as I said, there's great cardio, mm-hmm. But not even the self defense thing, because I think there's still enough. I still have enough, not muscle memory, but I know I could put a guy down well enough to run away. Back in the day, I would have been able to put him down and then deal with him for a while before strutting away. You know, I could. So it's not even a self-defense thing. It's I've accomplished this,
yep.
You know. So my idea is to get my black belt in karate. So black belt in Taekwondo when I was 16, black belt in karate. If I grade regularly, I will get it 51 maybe, and I think that's a pretty cool thing to get your black belt at, you know, 51 in martial arts. So I could be completely wrong. I don't know how their grading system works. I know in Taekwondo it used to be every 3 months.
Yep.
I know the Demon Princess. She's when she was a junior belt, she was the grading was every 2 months. But when they got to senior belt or advanced belt, it starts to stretch out a bit longer.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I'm determined. I I know my stuff ish. Yeah. You know, like I said, there's similar.
And 50 is still so young.
I know.
I always think of it in like life in segments.
Yeah.
Like if you one stay healthy.
Yeah.
Between 50 and 60, you can have a pretty slow decline, if not improvement,
yeah,
depending on what you're doing, of course.
Oh, I'm hoping for the improvement,
yeah, exactly. And then you think about yourself at 40,
yeah,
and the life you've lived in the last 10 years, that's yeah. That feels like a whole lifetime in itself. So it's like you've got a whole nother life, and then you're only 60,
yeah.
So why the hell would you not make it good?
Yeah. Well, I think about what my brother's, you know, I mean, my brother, so what am I? What am I? 49. So he's 59. And the things that he is still doing, and with Parkinson's disease. So, you know, like if he can achieve these things, I can too, and I don't have, you know, something that should stop me, that mm-hmm. I, you know, or not yeah. stop me, but that hinder me. So, and I think, yeah, it's an accomplishment. It's a, I did that. Mm. It's a fitness thing. It's a nostalgia thing. I have a certain amount of aggression, natural yep. aggression. It's nice to have a way of channeling that. The difference between Taekwondo when I did it and the karate that they do now, they actually do tournaments.
Yep.
So, you know, I can see myself getting in there and actually, you know, having a good old Donnybrook. when I'm, you know, further up the belts, yep. Maybe. But I had so much fun. I really, the two classes, I got again tomorrow. So yep. I'm really looking forward to it.
I think there's something cool about just levels in anything.
Like, yeah.
Like to gamify it that way. It's if you know what you have to do and that it's a short period of time and then you get that level increase.
Yeah.
Like where else are you getting that in life?
Yeah.
Like you don't get that anymore.
It's very much a here's my yellow belt. Mm-hmm. Look what I've achieved this. Here's yeah. my orange belt or whatever. Yellow. Orange, red. I should know because I've.
I need to study that.
You should know. Black. Black's the only one that I'm aiming for, right? You know.
But yeah. Even as like being an author or in business, there's this windy road through yeah. the cornfields that you have no idea what you're doing.
That's true.
No, and you're just chopping away, and yep. you occasionally pop up with someone, and they're like, "Hey, I'm more successful than you," and then you go, "Okay, I'll go in this direction," and then you're just constantly. Doing that over and over yeah. and over. And but it's like there is of course in most things there's if you do this you get this
yeah.
like if you exercise this way more likely than not you will get this but someone else will probably can do the same things and get more
yeah.
I think that's where but I think when you level the playing field on what you get yeah. which is the reward of the belt or if you get like a video game and that's why people love like the yeah. video games is going crazy because people probably there's so much just being lost now
yeah.
because one, it's not this whole corporate lifestyle that people live. Especially the younger generation is now like not interested in retirement.
Yeah.
Like it's not even a thing. Like you talk to people my age or younger and even myself, like when people talk to me about super, I look at them like, are you kidding? Like obviously for different reasons, yep. there's benefits of it, like tax benefits and that, but it's like my thought is like if I'm reliant on that when I'm that age, just take me out now. Like there's no point. Like so.
Oh, I know. Like, yeah, 100%. I mean, I don't even know if I have super. It's very hard to have super as an author. Like, you know,
I think a lot of people found out they had super when they could access 10 grand.
Yeah,
they're like, oh, yeah. Actually, do I have that? Yeah, but my point being that level – or that reward that is earned, it's still earned the same.
Yeah.
But it's the same to everyone who earns it.
Yeah.
Like it's not like you are in it and then you go to that level and the other person goes to the same level but their level's slightly sprinkled or something
yeah.
like
yeah.
that. Like
yeah.
it's the same thing and then that's where the community comes within it as well.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing that's not totally done is like the level of respect to the hierarchy.
Yeah.
Like if someone's up higher – and you've just joined, you don't come in with an attitude. Yeah. You obviously different people would break that curve, but
yeah.
It's the level of – and there's not really much of that anymore. But there's no – like you, if a new author comes onto the playing field, if you like, who's only been out a year
yeah.
and has somewhat success in something they've done, they have no respect for your time.
Of course, yeah, no. And that happens in my world. They'll have one book and it'll – do well on Amazon and then they're suddenly, you know, bagging out all the old school authors and,
yep.
you know, telling us we're all wrong and
yep.
get with the program and, you know, write more edgy. And that's what I was talking about earlier with, you know, a lot of the newbies that are going, no, it's romance, but it's romance my way or it's, you know, like the romance the way it should be. Doing it, but
does that happen every generation though? Do you when you started writing, were you trying to maintain some sort of code or honor towards the people who had done it before you, or were you thinking, nah. I'm just gonna do it for me?
I was just writing the stories that I wanted to, I had to write. That was, this is what I'd like to read, so I'm gonna write what I'd like to read,
yeah.
But I still knew a romance still has a happy ever after. So, you know, there's so many different ways of getting to that happy ever after, but that it still has to have an happy ever after. So I wasn't going to buck that trend. I did write one where the hero died from, but it was a menage, you know, two guys and a girl. And one of the guys dies with brain cancer. And my editor did say to me, you cannot do this. You know, you don't do that. He has to live. Because that was a problem.
And then you did it?
Yeah, I did. And I gave him his own story. Yep. So,
and what was the customers or the customers?
Readers.
Readers. the readers' feedback.
No, that was good. Yep. They all loved him, you know, and the reviews, the emails were, oh, I'm so glad Rob didn't die, you know.
Yep.
I also broke a cardinal rule where I had a dog belonging to a character get killed. Yep. And when you write an animal into a romance, you do not. Like, it's an unwritten law, the animal does not. The pet, or you know, doesn't die, but
yeah, well, they don't do that really much at all.
I did that, yeah. I killed it. I killed
John Wick is the only one I can.
That's it, you know. That was the John Wick's dog, but yeah. Wick's dog, but yeah. So I did kill an animal, and I did. That was, you know, can't believe that she killed the dog, you know. But I gave them another dog. This, you know. No, that does sounds horrible. But it had to happen.
Well, that's what they did in John Wick 2.
Yeah, that's right. It had to happen. It had to happen for plot reasons and character development. But I wouldn't come in though. Maybe because I'm a bit long in the tooth, but I wouldn't come in and go, you're all doing this wrong.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not about, you know, everyone do whatever they want.
Yeah. With respect.
With respect or without care either.
Yeah.
Like, just like if you just do your thing and don't try to preach that your thing is different to someone else's, then just do whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah.
So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. So, but the karate, I'm enjoying the karate. I my goal, black belt, and because I'm now separated from, you know, the youngest, she doesn't have to look at me and be embarrassed. And she does enjoy... When I came home from my first class and I come in and I'm like, oh, we did kata and we did bunkai. And she's like, show me your kata, which is the patterns, you know, like, and I showed her what I had learned and she's correcting me here and there. She was really enjoying that little power trip.
That's cool.
Yeah, she was having a good time there.
So. And I just, there's just not enough people in their 50s or older or 40s doing things.
Yeah.
Like,
because like, we're tired and society tells us that this is where we're meant to be doing.
I think it's more of a social construct than being tired.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's just you're meant.
Oh, no, I'm tired.
you might be tired, but I think most people just think they're not tired. And then obviously you fall into the trap of obligations.
Yeah.
You have to work and then you have to.
Work on the house on the weekend.
Yeah.
And that's what we as our generation are basically society tells us. You have to maintain your yard. You have to, you know.
I
enjoy that, but I don't want to do it every day.
I don't do that. I do not want to spend time doing my grass. And then what I figured out as well is, like, you wouldn't think there would be that many levels in, like, yes, gardening and doing all that. Obviously, people are highly talented in that. But in terms of just general doing your edges and mowing your lawn, I thought, oh, that's pretty much, there's a standard.
Yeah.
But then the guy came to do it and he was so much better at it than me.
Yeah.
He did it. Twice as good and twice as quick.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. Okay.
And you look at it and you go, wow, that looks really nice.
That looks
nice.
Much better than when I did it. And I wasn't even trying to improve on it because I thought that's what it is. So I guess that's like what people do when they're bad drivers or something.
They think they're awesome.
They're just driving along and like, that's the standard. I'm doing what everyone else is doing, but clearly I wasn't. but yeah, I've never regretted that.
I must admit, plants have become, you ask my girls, they say I'm going through a midlife crisis at the moment.
Or a midlife awakening.
Because the garden is my thing. You know, like I have to buy plants and I have to garden. Like, and that's it. So my midlife crisis is making my garden be the way I want my garden to be, regardless of what I'm told. And I want to put a tree there. I'm putting a tree there. No, you can, you know, can't tell me that tree doesn't go there. That tree is going there.
We just find in our house that everything seems to die, even when you follow the protocol.
You actually have to water them. You do realize that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's like, all right, place it here or in this position near certain light. Don't water it too much and they'll do it every – and you follow it and it dies.
Well, I have in front of my house this cascade lily pilly. It's not a hedge because I hate trees that are cut into a shape, you know, like,
really?
It has to be
that regal.
If I had my way, my you know, yard would look like someone just plonked a house in the middle of a bush. Mm-hmm. Like, there's chaos, but chaos, me and chaos, right? That's me.
Yep.
But I have this cascade lily pilly hedge, but it's unformed, like, you know, I've never trimmed them, but one up and died for no apparent reason.
Exactly.
Like, it's like, why did you die? And it's the one that, so now from our footpath, you see straight into our door. I can't believe that was the one that died. It could have been the N1. We don't see anything, but I had to plant a new one in there. And yeah, that was quite a stressful. I still don't know why it died. Mm-hmm. It's weighing on my mind.
I'm not against fake plants by any means.
No, I have fake plants in the house.
Yep.
But I also have living plants in the house.
Yep.
But no. And I made, because bringing a dog into the house and, you know, dogs do what dogs do. So I had pot plants all over the back deck. And Ebony thought they were great to dig in and basically to destroy. I had these beautiful blueberry bushes in big pots and she just trashed those. So I've made our back deck is kind of wraps around the house. So we got these kind of like slatted doors. You know,
bifolds?
No, they slide. And they've got Venetians on, so you can open up and close them. So I basically I put those doors up so she can't get around the side of to the side deck.
Yep.
And that's my sanctuary. And I have so many plants in there, probably more plants than needs to be in that spot. But at least, you know, she can't destroy them now. But they're all my live plants and then they spill into the house and then the further you get away from the living area, the more fake my plants become.
Yep.
So by the time you get up to our ensuite, they're all fake plants in there. Then you don't have to worry about those ones.
That's cool. So we've hit time now. So that was very quick.
And I don't think I said anything important or significant.
But still great.
Or groundbreaking.
So just give us a quick roundup of what you've got going on book-wise and also just where people could also just know a bit more about you.
Okay, well, quick roundup. So I have, in theory, Along Came an Aussie coming out in October. Mm-hmm. There'll be Dark Destiny, which is paranormal romance, in December.
Yep.
And whatever the second DeLuca sister book is going to be called, the Christmas one.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. I was thinking about, you know, like the whole of the Little Drummer Boy. I was thinking about calling it the Well-Hung Drummer Boy.
Oh, no.
But then I thought, oh, so there you go. Clearly no. That's a bad idea. Bad idea, Lexi.
But don't listen to my opinion.
So there'll be one. I'm working on a children's book, illustrated children's book, which won't have anything to do with Lexi. That's about a dog called Wombat. Hopefully that will be sometime next year. But we'll get in and do another podcast when that one
absolutely
comes
will.
Up.
Let us know when that's coming out.
Yeah. And for www.lexicooper.com. Social, Twitter, Instagram. You can find all the links on my website.
Well, Lexi Cooper, thanks for joining us.
That's all right, Brendan. No problems. Anytime.
Thanks for joining us on the Brendan Osborne podcast.